Good morning for me, whenever you're listening to this, good whatever it is to you, and happy day. Today is the 13th of Adar. I'm recording this for the 13th day of Adar Sheni, of the second month of Adar. It's Responsible Day. This is Gideon Rothstein. Thank you to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Raumitz, David Hochhauser, for putting this year online, making them available to you. Today, we're going to learn from a new Meshiv that we have not, I don't think, learned from before, named Rabbi Chaim Falaji. The shoot is called Chaim Biyad, and it's response number 49, Simon Mem Tet, Shut Chaim Biyad Simon Mem Tet. And Chaim Falaji is a somewhat well-known Rav in Posek. He was born in Smyrna, Turkey, which later became known as Izmir, in 1788, and he passed away in 1868. So he lived about 80 years. He became the Chacham Bashi, I think, of all of Turkey, at least of Izmir, and he wrote many, many things. He's very well-known in halachic literature. That title of Chacham Bashi also became a title in Eretz Yisrael, which meaning a reminder that in Eretz Yisrael, the Sephardic chief rabbi goes back hundreds of years, as opposed to the Ashkenazi chief rabbi. The Rav Chaim Falaji, as far as I know, was not the Chacham Bashi of Eretz Yisrael. He was the Chacham Bashi, I think, maybe of the Ottoman Empire, or at least of Turkey, or of Izmir, but important Rav. And he was asked the following question. Now, I have to say, in Adar Sheni, there are not nearly as many options for response written on that day, because if you think about it, there are 7/19ths as many Adar Sheni days as the rest of the calendar year. So if on a usual day I have 40-45 options of responsa from which to choose, which is about the right number, then 7/19ths of that comes out to 15 or 16 options, but many of those are just problematic options for various reasons that I'm not going to get into here. So today I chose tshuva. Now, I was excited about learning from Rav Chaim Falaji, although the truth is, most of this tshuva is not Rav Chaim Falaji's. Most of this tshuva is written by a man, because, you know, you're reading, and then all of a sudden you get to towards the end of the tshuva, it's kadat yalacha l'maaseh. This I wrote as halacha, and I think you can act on it. Mitzvah Yisrael Yisraelim Shkiyon, Hashem should save me. It's meaning all the prayers that they went well. Hatzair Moshe Rifael Sfaradi Tahor. So it's not Rav Chaim Falaji. And then there's a brief at the end appended to that. There is a fairly brief note by Rav Chaim Falaji agreeing with much of what this Rav Moshe Hatzair, Rav Moshe Ben Rifael, had written. So we're going to learn it, because we know that Rav Chaim Falaji agrees with it, therefore he thought this was correct halacha, an actual halacha, and therefore that's what we're going to learn from today. So the question was like this: you have a mikvah, and let's remember that mikvah water, so this is also part of what caught my eye about the tshuva, and again, I didn't have all that many options. Part of what caught my eye about the tshuva is that we don't usually talk about mikvah issues. So let's remember that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, for most things that you wanted to get tahor, you wanted to get ritually purified, so you go into the Beit HaMikdash, you needed to go to mikvah. The one thing that needed much more than the mikvah was if somebody came into contact with the person who had passed away with a corpse, so that creates tumat mate, and that requires hazat me paraduma. I mean chatat. You need to be sprinkled on a third and seventh day with that water. That person, I think, also has to go to mikvah too, but they're sprinkled on the third and seventh day in order to become tahor. But most forms of tumah, the way to remove the tumah is whenever the cause of tumah goes away. So sometimes the cause of tumah was I touched a sheret. So if I touched a dead vermin, whatever the sheret is, whatever the creepy crawly thing is that I touched and that creates tumah, I touched it, I go to mikvah. When I'm no longer touching it, I go to mikvah, and then that night I become tahor. Right, that would be an example. Let's suppose somebody, you know, a man lives with his wife in the ordinary marital way. That creates a tumah for the man and the woman too. They go to mikvah the next day. That night they become tahorim. Woman becomes a nida, so or a zav. I'm not going to give a distinction. So when that stops, right? Yes. So there, you need two things. You need the cessation of the bodily experience that's creating the tumah, as well as going to mikvah. Mikvah is very important. And what's going to come up in this tshuva is that for mikvah water, you need to put together, we assume it's 40 se'ah of water, which is a fairly large amount of water. You need that to be natural rainwater. It's got to be water that came down from the sky, and then you have to gather it into one place, into a mikveh. Mikveh really means a collection of, a mikveh mayim, a collection of water. So the question is transport. How do you get it from wherever it falls into the mikveh that you want it? So one option is you could have an open-air mikveh that you're going to cover up once it gets full and just wait for rain to fill it itself. And there are times that you can do that. But sometimes you can't find a place that you're going to have a mikveh which is so open to the rain even before you roof it in that you're going to be able to fill it up. So you want to be able to transport water to it. And that's a problem, because if you put water through a pipe, so then the halacha is that it becomes mayim shuvim, right? Why don't you just bring the water? Bring the water in buckets. So the answer is that mayim shuvim, which literally means drawn water, which would be like well water that I draw, but it means any water that has been picked up and carried and moved by human beings using human vessels, so that's no longer at a rabbinic level, that's no longer permitted to be used as mei mikveh, as mikveh water. Now, once you get the water into a mikveh, and you get 40 sa'ah together, so then what you do is, you can, and there's a complicated way that you do this, I'm not talking about the exact halachos, but then you can pipe in water, because once a mikveh is kosher, as long as it never stops being kosher, then mayim she'uvim is no longer post-sale that mikveh, no longer invalidates that mikveh. One other small piece of issue that we should think about is that when it comes to rainwater, the halacha, according to most authorities, is that you can only be tovel in it, you can only immerse in it when it's gathered into one place. And that makes rivers a problem, meaning seas aren't a problem because that isn't generally considered to be mostly rainwater. So if it's natural water, then one can immerse in it and remove tumma even if it's flowing, I'm pretty sure. But when it comes to rainwater, then we have a problem, because rainwater is only mitaher b'ashboren, I think it is, but when it's gathered together into one place. And with rivers, we're not always sure if it's mostly rainwater or mostly natural water. There are many rivers that we know that dry up when there's not enough rain. So those rivers are mostly rainwater. So those rivers, you wouldn't be able to do tevila in unless you found a way to stop the water. So one thing you could do, and so that will come up in the tshuva as well, briefly, is that you could dig a ditch, as it were, within the riverbed, then that ditch could hold 40 sa'ah of water. So then if you dipped in there, it's true the water's flowing over it all the time, but some of the water is going down into that ditch that you dug within that river, and that would be okay. So our question is, the question here is, again, Shut Chaim Biyatzim and Memtet, B'mikvah Shemek Shemim Ba'im Ayidei Silonot Shel Matechet. So what happened was, the way they were going to get, so we're looking for a way to start the mikvah water off with 40 sa'ah. Once we get it there, we'd have a much easier time of just maintaining it, but how do we get it there? So in this particular mikvah, they got the water there through metal pipes. Now, ordinarily, that should be a problem, because the metal pipes are A, makabli tuma, they have ritual impurity, and B, they're a kli, they're a vessel, they're a human vessel, that should make the water mayim she'uvim. So the answer is that if the pipes are in some way attached to the ground, they are permanently stuck into the ground, so then halakhically, and this, I'm not telling you the full halakh about this, I'm saying you can pass on the basis of what I'm saying here at all, but basically, if the pipes are rooted into the ground or attached to the ground in some firm, real clear way, then we no longer think of them as pipes, we think of them as the ground. Meaning everybody agrees that if you had, let's say, a mikvah that's going to be the bottom of a hill and the water just flowed on its own, forgetting pipes, the water just flowed down, right? Let's say you put a mikvah at the bottom of one of the Swiss Alps, and when the snow melted, you had this big flow of water, it flows down to the mikvah, then you got 47 mikvah. That's clearly fine. There's no mayim she'uvim there. Allah is that if you put pipes somewhere to direct the water, but those pipes are stuck into the ground, they're firmly put into the ground, that too will be okay. So in this case, that's what they thought they had, but then the pipes got uprooted from whatever had attached them to the ground. Let's say they had been, cemented in and the cement broke, and now they're just loose pipes. And the mikveh wasn't full. So if the mikveh had been full, that also wouldn't have been a problem, because then the mikveh, once it's got more than 40 sa'ah, mayim she'uvim, the drawn water doesn't make a problem. But that wasn't true either. So then the water went in, and they put the pipe one into the other until they got close to the mikveh. And the mikveh itself, just before the mikveh itself, they had like a little box, a square box or chest, and it was open on the top. And then what happened was, the water would go into it, into this box, and then it had a hole in its side, like the opening of a pipe or of a sink. And next to that, they had another pipe, right? And in that hole, they had a pipe, and from that pipe, the water would go down to the mikvah. So you got a whole bunch of issues that you have that you have with all these piping. So the first instinct is to say, well, the mikvah is no good, right? Because the mikvah is no good because it was filled up with water that came from, that was rainwater originally, but it came through pipes, and the pipes are mekabli tuma. They're items that are susceptible to ritual impurity, and we don't allow that. Beis Yosef quotes the Rush that whether or not the Rush seems to have held that even if you attach the pipe to the ground, if they were made of metal, that's a problem. But there might be a way to get around it. So this Moshe, who's writing to Rav Chaim Falaji in Chaim Biyad, says, I think maybe you could say the mikvah is kosher, because the Rambam held in the sixth chapter of Hilchos Mikvos, and then B'yus Yosef quotes it as well, that kol kli shelo na'aseh lekabala, any vessel, any container, any holder, that you didn't make it for that purpose. So it does contain things, right? There are things that you can make where they could contain things. That's not the purpose of them at all. That's what you intend them for. Even if it could hold something, so let's suppose I had made a flat sheet of metal. So that's not a container in any way. So therefore, it's not, but it's not a container anyway because it's just flat. But all I'm, and what I really mean for it to do is that the water, the rainwater will hit it and it will slide down it, right? So it's not like a, now if I fold up the sides, then all of a sudden you have a pipe. So, but my point is that I'm not making it for any purpose to hold it at all. So then the pipes that we're talking about there too, even if you, according to this Rambam, even if you make them of metal, since you don't intend the metal and the pipes to hold them at all, the point of the pipes isn't to contain them, it's to guide the water down in. So there, that Rambam, this Rabbi, Rav Chaim Falaji, is saying, I think that shouldn't pass the mikvah because you don't mean it to hold and to contain, and therefore it's not a container, and therefore the water shouldn't be considered mayim shuvim. So it seems like you have a machlok between the Rambam and the Rush about this issue. The Rush seems to hold that if it's mekabel tuma, then it's a problem. If it's susceptible to ritual impurity, it's a problem, even if you don't, and the Rush seems to think even if you attach them to the ground. And the Rambam seems to think that attaching to the ground is necessary if they're not made for the purpose of containing water. That the fact that they are susceptible to ritual impurity is not the standard. The standard is, do they intend to be hold water? If they're not made to hold water, they don't make the water mayim shi'uvim. And the minister of Moshe, Ben Raphael, says, if you look in the Beit Yosef's presentation, let's remember the Beit Yosef is the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Yosef Karel wrote many important works, but three that stand out in their importance. One is the Kesef Mishnah, commentary on the Rambam, that's very important and valuable and useful. Another one is the Shulchan Aruch, which is obviously very important and useful. And then, in addition to the Shulchan Aruch, he wrote what's called the Beit Yosef. The Beit Yosef was a commentary on the Tur. The Tur was the premier halachic work, I think, before Rav Yosef Karo wrote the Shulchan Aruch, which became more popular and more usable. But the Tur also tried very hard not to give a lot of opinions, just give you the halacha psuka, the way that we practice halachically. The Beit Yosef came along and he said, here are the discussions that the Tur is not sharing with you. When the Beit Yosef presents our issue, he mentions the Rush, as we just said, and he presents the Rush's idea. But the way this Rav Moshe Ben Raphael understands the discussion, the Beit Yosef, he says, Tola lakipe lisvarat haramba. Tola lakipe is a nice phrase that comes from Rashi in Ketubot. The Rashi in Ketubot, Pei Aleph Amibet, explains, Kipe are nizamim, and the Rashi explains what it means is yipei v'hina et divarav. The Beit Yosef, that in the Gemara, you talk about somebody, other people, but that when you have a situation where one person quotes somebody else and then quotes him at length or extends his saying about that person, it shows agreement. That's what the Beit Yosef says. If you look at, that's what Rav Yosef Ben Raphael says. If you look at the Beit Yosef's presentation of the Rush, he mentions it. If you look at the presentation of the Rambam, he mentions it and supports it and talks about it, and that would suggest that he agreed with the Rambam, which would mean that our concern with getting water, rainwater, into a mikvah, our concern is that it can't go into containers, but that as long as what it's going into are items that are never meant to contain anything, they're only meant to transmit. It's never supposed to be. So you can have, for example, and this is me talking, this is not in the tshuva, but I think, let's say, in apartment buildings today, you'll have very often, you'll have pipes, heating pipes, water, heating, hot water pipes. The hot water pipes that go throughout the building are always have some water in them, and then when people draw water from them, there's water in the pipes that come, and then the boiler fills up more, and then that puts more water into the pipe. But those pipes always have water in them as well. So the pipes that always have water in them as well, you wouldn't say they're not made to contain anything. They are made to contain anything. It's true that they're also made to transport water from place to place, but they're also made to contain. So that wouldn't be what we're talking about here. What we're saying is, the Rambam is saying that if you have things that whose only purpose is to transport and not to contain water at all, so that you would expect them. So for example, I think another example could be gutters on a roof. Water gutters on a roof are not meant to have any water in them. They're really meant to be angled such that when rain falls, the gutters transport the water there. So that those are the kinds of things the Rambam seems to be saying should not create a problem for mikvah water. And then he throws in, and this is always a thing to watch, because some people will say this more easily and some will not, that if the Ravid doesn't comment on the Rambam, that implies the Ravid agrees. So that's actually somewhat of a historical question, but it's assumed very often in halakhic literature. I think that I know people, I think one of them might be my former teacher, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, who held that you can't really say that about the Ravid on Mishnah Torah, because it's not clear that the Ravid on Mishnah Torah meant to systematically look at every Rambam and comment on it. So that would be an interesting question, meaning if I can find, and I have not done this research, others have, and you can look it up, I haven't done it, I not only haven't done the research, I haven't read the secondary research, but I believe my memory is that you can find places where the Ravid holds a different way than the Rambam. The Ravid had a different opinion, the Rambam in books that the Ravid wrote, and yet on the Rambam doesn't comment. That's already a very great weakness to this kind of idea here, to the idea that whenever the Ravid doesn't comment, you can assume the degrees of the Rambam, because that's only true if he was systematically going through the book. But if he was reading the book and just commenting on the book or glossing the Rambam's book as the mood struck him, but did not mean to be systematic about it, did not mean to do it every single time there was an issue, so then you can't make this claim. Anyway, this is Rav Moshe ben Rafael sometime 1867. We're in the area of 1867. We'll get to the date, how we got the 13th of Adar Sheni of 1867, of Hei Tuf Resh Chof Zayin, in a little while. It's sort of towards the end of the Tshuva. So this date, this letter is actually undated, but somewhere in that area of 1867. So this Rav Moshe ben Rafael is assuming that if the Ravid doesn't comment, it means that he agrees. I think that's not quite as clear. It's more clear in the case of Ramah. When the Ramah doesn't comment on Shulchan Aruch, there we generally assume the Ramah agrees with the Shulchan Aruch's plaque, and that the Ramah, in fact, is going through the Sefer carefully, going through the book Shulchan Aruch carefully to see where Ashkenazim had a different practice. So there it's much more common, I think, to assume that if Ramah says nothing, it means the Ramah thought the Shulchan Aruch's ruling was clear. Anyway, back to our situation of the piping. So that would suggest that the Ravid, he's assuming the Ravid therefore would agree that if the pipe, if the point of a piece of a vessel, of a kli, is to only transport something and not to contain it, that would not create a problem according to the Rambam, maybe according to the Ravid in terms of mikvah water. Even for the Rush, this from Moshe ben Rafael suggests, maybe the Rush is halacha that you can't use that piping even if it's connected to the ground, or certainly if it's not connected to the ground, hainu lechatchila. Maybe that's only what he's telling you to do before you create a mikvah. But maybe once a mikvah is created, that's called bidiyavad. Now, it's not necessarily called bishadatcha, because theoretically you can make another mikvah. Bidiyavad is where you've already done something, and you could theoretically do it again. Are you required to do it again? So there are many halakhot where you should have done it X way, and it's not. So when we say bidiyavad, you can do it another way. It's not like, well, if you're not feeling it to do the right way, you could do it the wrong way. Bidiyavad means he already did it the less than good way. And then the question halakha is it always true that you have to go back and redo it well? So the answer is halakha, very often there's the right way. Then there's the way which, once it's done, we won't make you go back and do it. And then there are things where, if you have absolutely no other option, then you can do them even without. And that's called a shot at chak situation. Here, you've already made the mikvah. Having already made the mikvah, would the rush have held that you're required to go back and do it again? So this Rav Moshe ben Rafael says, if you look at the Beis Yosef presentation of the Rosh, it seems clear that the Rosh meant it halacha lechatchila. This is the way you're supposed to do it. You're required to do it. But if it were actually done another way, so that becomes a bidiyavat situation, and then we don't halachically require you to go back. So you have the Rambam and the Ravid allowing getting the water to the mikvah through a kli, through a pipe that's mekabel tumah, and you have the Rosh not allowing it, but having, if it's already been done, not requiring us to go and build another mikvah. So the question is, don't raise the following question. The following question is, what do you mean it's a bidiyavat, it's already been done? Every woman who goes to mikvah, and any man who chooses to go to that mikvah, they're going in lechatchila. Meaning, again, remember that lechatchila means that I am choosing a certain form of halachic practice. I am thinking now what to do halachically, and I'm going off to do it, right? Is this lulav good? Lechatchila means, can I decide to shake this lulav? The other question would be, I shook a lulav and realized there was a problem. Do I need to go back and find another lulav and shake that lulav? That would be a bidiyavad situation. So we just said, the Rush says, well, bidiyavad, when the mikvah's already been made, all right, bidiyavad, you can use this mikvah. But that's odd, because every person who goes into that mikvah, who immerses in that mikvah to become tahor, to become ritually pure, is making, it seems like, a lechatchila decision. They're making a prospective decision. They haven't yet immersed in a mikvah. I'm going to now choose to immerse in this mikvah. Isn't that isn't that not a bidiyavad situation? So this Moshe ben Raphael says, no. Once the mikvah is made, that's a bidiyavad. And the question is this a usable mikvah or not? Once we were, if we decide it's a usable mikvah, bidiyavad, then it's a usable mikvah. Right? It's already been done, but now it's a usable mikvah. And he gives an example. Knesset Gadol gives another example. Let's say you fill a mikvah. So mayim shuvim, let's remember, is not good to make a mikvah. You can't use drawn water. So I can't take, I can't fill a mikvah. It'd take a long time anyway. But let's take two buckets, and I'm going to start pouring water into a mikvah. You can't do that. Now, what if you have a clean minukav? What if you have a bucket, a pail, and it's got a hole in it? So the hole in it helps because you might say to yourself, well, the hole means that it's not mekabel tumah, it's no longer a usable kli for its purpose, it's no longer a usable container for its real purpose. It's therefore not really a kli, and therefore this water should be not really mayim shuvim, and therefore you think you're allowed to do it. The answer is that we don't hold that way. We hold that you're not allowed to do that. But the Knesset Gadol says, let's say we already filled the mikvah, and they did it that way, and this is the crucial part for our purposes. He says, it's not a lechatkila, it's b'diavad, v'tovlin bo lechatkila, and then you can use it, you can go into the mikvah. Point being, that's what Rosh is pointing out, the point being that once a mikvah has been made, if we hold that you're allowed to, if we hold the mikvah is valid b'diavad, that means that it's valid. The fact that the b'diavad question was only a question for what let me decide that it's valid. But once it's valid, it's a fully valid mikvah and you can use it. Especially in our case, he says, because if you were to tell the people they had to empty this mikvah and wait for real rainwater to come in, and redo it, it would be a while. And then that would mean there'd be people in town who would no longer be able to, who would not for a certain period of time be able to have family relations. They might not have children and they might, during that time, and that's called bitul period of mitzvah period. If you're stopping people from fulfilling a mitzvah, and therefore certainly we want to help them by saying that this mikvah, this kashrut b'diavad, means they can use it and make use of it and be everything should be fine. And here's where it gets a little complicated, I think. He doesn't think so, but I think he says, but truth is, in this city, you have two other mikvot. So how do you have two other mikvot? Because there are two rich people. And they made their own private mikvahs in their homes. I think you still have this today. People just like say, oh, wouldn't it be beautiful? I'm a rich guy. I want to put a mikvah in my house. So they put a mikvah in the house. So you say to yourself, well, so let's say that this new mikvah is not a bidiyavad. Let's not say that it's already been done. We can't do anything about it because we can use these other mikvot until this mikvah comes better. And let's even do better. The answer is, they don't let anybody use their mikvah, even relatives. And then he writes in the tshuva, misibot gedolot, for these great reasons that they know. And therefore, he says, so those two mikvot don't count in our calculus at all, and therefore, we can rely on this mikvah, again, because it's a b'diavad. So, right, because it's a b'diavad, and because changing it and fixing it would take a long time, and that has a cost as well. But that gets you into a situation that he doesn't bring up a lot, so I'm going to say it very briefly, but it gets a situation where we start after now weighing what are considered options or not options, meaning how much pressure can we bring on these rich people to bear that they should let people use their mikvah, at least until the new mikvah. So you say, well, they don't want to. So we're now accepting a mikvah that, at least according to the Rosh, wasn't fully properly made. We're agreeing that it's a b'diavad situation when we could easily change it if only these two rich people were to change their minds and allow people to use their mikvah. So he takes it for granted that we don't do such a thing, and I wonder about those kinds of conflict situations. To me, are very interesting to think about in terms of how we accept or don't accept their claim. Right? A man says to me, well, you're not using my mikvah. I'm going to use his refusal rather than fight his refusal and have the community put pressure on him to allow us to this or this or this. I'm going to just accept that and move on. So what I accept and what I don't accept seems to me to very much shape our conversations. Another issue is that you say, well, there's a river nearby, so why don't we say, let people use the river and we'll wait to be able to fix the mikvah and to refill the mikvah with proper rainwater. So the answer is no, we don't do that. For one thing, there are a lot of women who simply won't immerse in a mikvah. They have a lot of reasons. One is bikuach nefesh. They're worried about drowning. You don't know exactly how people did or didn't know how to swim in the olden days, but it seems like women especially didn't know how to swim well, and therefore they were very nervous about going to rivers because they were worried about being carried away by the current. And you have stories about women bringing a friend with them and holding onto the friend's hand, and you're worried about the mikvah, the immersion, because they might have been holding the hand too tight. There's all sorts of issues with going into a mikvah in terms of the physical safety of it, and you have situations where women have passed away, have sadly, tragically drowned when they were going through their immersion. It's also true that, as Rav Yosef Karo posited another important sefer of his called Avkat Rochel, which is his book of Responsa, it just doesn't rise to the level of his other Sfarim, he cited that the majority of authorities, the majority of rabbinic decisors hold that you can't immerse in mikveh, like I said before, because of the rainwater issue, whether it's mostly rainwater and it's running water rather than gathered water, and therefore it's better not. Not only that, that with the river, you're worried about whether it's rainwater or not. That psul, that problem, if it was really mostly rainwater and the rainwater is flowing rather than held in one place, that would be a psul d'oraita. That would invalidate the immersion at a Torah level. Whereas shmayim she'uvim, drawn water, is clearly only a rabbinic issue. Meaning, if a woman had some huge bathtub in her house, or a man had some huge bathtub in their house that contained 40 sel, which is a lot, but let's say they did, and they were to just draw a bath and fill it, and then they get into the immersion in the water, midi'oraita, at a Torah level, that's a valid immersion. And I think actually there are people today, there are men today, Hasidic men, who have the custom of going to mikveh every day, just in case they had relations with their wife. You don't want to separate days on when they didn't, but they have relations with their wife. They want to get tahar from tumat keri. They want to get ritually pure from the tumah created by the act of, by a man having marital relations with his wife. They will use, and I learned this only, you learned this only 15, 20 years ago, but I was shocked by it, they will use a swimming pool. Even though that's clearly mayim she'uvim, even though it's clearly drawn water, they will say, yeah, but for this tevila that I'm doing, I can ignore, and there's a whole discussion about it in the Gemara, you can ignore mayim she'uvim in terms of the tevila of a baal keri, the tevila of a man who has had a seminal emission. So that I only mention that because it's a reminder that here we're talking about an issue to Rabbanan, whereas the issue of a river might be a d'oraita issue, might be a biblical invalidity, because if it's mostly rainwater and it's flowing rather than in one place, so then you have a problem. Unless you could dig and make a ditch in the water that would in the riverbed that would contain the water. Another issue with dipping in a river, immersing in a river, and we saw this another time with the tshuva that Rabbi Yosef had about in Egypt about converts, but that applies to women as well, that you have to worry that there'll be women who will feel uncomfortable because they're worried, meaning women tend to go to mikvah in the nude, right, without any clothing on because we're worried about chatzitza, we're worried about something that separates their body from the mikvah water. But if they're at a river, and in this town the river was a very popular place because the only source of water for people, they couldn't drink the well water, then she'd always be worried that a man might come at any moment, because I guess you didn't have like a separate section of the river for mikvah purposes, so that she'd always, a man would be coming, so she'd immerse really quickly and maybe not immerse properly. So even if you could say the river was okay, that so Rabbi Yosef to respond to, this is 80 years later, was that a woman in that situation, maybe she could wear some extremely loose clothing, and therefore you wouldn't have to worry about the issues of being in the nude and all those things, but that's not part of this tshuva here. So therefore, these are all reasons why river water is not going to be a good possibility. There's more here that we're going to have to skip because we're going to run out of time, and I went through Chaim Volozhin's answer and to the part of the tshuva that was actually written on the 13th of Adar Sheni, which is not this part yet. So I think these are really important issues that people don't always think about and remember. I just wanted to point out that also the mikvah, he talks about the fact that the mikvah was leaking, and not quickly obviously leaking, but slowly leaking. You have this problem with mikvahs, right? If you start out with 45 sa'ah, let's say, you measure it 3 weeks later, it's 44 and a half sa'ah. You measure it 6 weeks later, it's 40 sa'ah, it's 42 sa'ah. You never want it to go below 40, because once you go below 40, then again, you have to fill it, and you want to worry about the piping issue, and you have to worry about it, because like we said, the rush seems to think, even if the pipes are stuck into the ground, that it's a problem. So you have to worry about all these things. And therefore, the mikvah is going slowly. So he says, yeah, you can fill it. So what you do is you pipe in water and you make sure that it never goes below 40. Now, there is a case in the Gemara called Hitil Sa'av in Atal Sa'av. Let's say somebody goes up to a mikvah, throws in a sa'av of water, and takes out a sa'av of water. So that seems to be okay, but it only seems to be okay for as long as there's almost half. He mentioned 19 sa, which I had not known before. There are 19 sa of the original mikvah water. So you have a problem. What if you have less than that? So he says that that's only where you're visibly taking water out. But you're not visibly taking water out. There's no marit ayin issue that people think that it's just fine to bring in pale water all the time. So then he thinks you can do it. So that's all the things that he wrote about this mikvah, this bay, this Moshe ben Raphael. Chaim Falaji answers, opens up with all the kinds of admirations that we find in a lot of these tshuvot that I never mentioned here. I don't want to pretend they're not there. Tshuvot are very often open with flowery openings and greetings, and people are, as part of rabbinic politeness, to be very complimentary here too. He says it's like a jewel coming out, like the sun at noon, it's shining so bright. And I agree with pretty much everything you said, but just because you don't want to, I don't want to say nothing other than, oh, very nice, I want to... he's going to say a few things. So one of the things that he says, and I'm going to skip, is that he doesn't agree that a river is a problem, and he doesn't fully agree that this is a bedievit situation about this mikvah, because he thinks the pipes that they had, since they were mostly stuck in the ground and they were mostly for transport, he thinks that's probably okay, even in l'chatkilin, you'd have to work, get to the bedievit situation. So then he points out that he had a sfik, which is not the particular sfik doesn't interest me here, but that once you have a sfik, that you're allowed to paskin that way. Some people disagree with that. So it gets to all these klali apsak. He also thought it was not just a bidiyavad, he thought it was a sharat chak, because they don't have another mikvah. Sharat chak is where you have really no other options. That's even that's at a stronger halachic reason to allow something, even the bidiyavad. But I just point out one more time that to think of it as a sharat chak means you have to ignore the fact that there's two available, there are two mikvot around, just that the owners are being stingy about using it for whatever reason. Maybe they have good reason, so maybe it's not stingy. They're being private about it. They're holding on to it, and yet we're going to allow ourselves to think of it as a shadat chak. Fundamentally, he has a ritva that says you can do it with a svik. He has a chronu that you can do it, and therefore we can rely on them. But he says he thinks everybody would agree that you have to, meanwhile, make sure to reattach those pipes to the ground, to get them firmly stuck to the ground, so that the next time that rain comes, the mikvah can be refilled with the water that is kosher water, and then you won't have a problem anymore at all. So yes, you can use it now. Yes, it's a diavad, maybe it's a shat chak, and you can make use of it, but you have to also do what you can that the next time rain falls, you're going to be able to have a full, proper, appropriate mikvah. Because mikvah is a serious issue, because if you don't go to mikvah properly, then the couple are violating an isur karet, whether they know about it or not, and you don't want to avoid that. So the more that you can make a mikvah fulfill all the opinions out there, the better that it is. So that's an important balance that he's striking here. He's saying, yes, you can use the mikvah now, because we rely on a sfik, on a double down, but it's a bidiyavad, it's already been done, it's a shatakak, all that is true. And at the same exact time, it's also true that you should be doing everything you can to make sure that the mikvah fulfills all the possible opinions that we can find a way to make them fulfill. But fundamentally, he agrees with you. Anybody who does agrees with this rabbi is a problem. This is from the 27th of Shvat in Tav Reish Chof Zayin in 1867, which is not yet the date that we wanted. And then at the very close of the response, he says, and I also got a letter from another posig, Moshe Shapir, which might be Sapir. Anyway, Moshe Shapir, written on the 13th of Adar Sheni of Tav Reish Chof Zayin of 1867, which is the date we're looking for. This is a responsible day for the 13th of Adar Sheni. I think it's the same with Moshe Ben Raphael. And he says, I got your letter and I appreciated it. And it's true, it's a shat chak because they don't have another mikvah. And I am not. This Moshe Shapir says, I am not a person who tries to be, I'm miyirei ha'ohra'ah. I try to avoid paskin halacha because I don't feel competent and comfortable doing it, even though he clearly is somewhat of a Talmud Chacham, if not a very good Talmud Chacham. He says that as soon as I got your letter, I already made sure to tell them they should do their best to fix it up, to fix the pipes, meaning to put them into the ground so that the next time, as it was originally, so the next time it rains, we can get this and everything should go well. And that is the correspondence between Rav Moshe Shapir and Rav Chaim Falaji about a mikvah that had problems, showing them fighting, working on both sides trying to make sure it's as good as it possibly could be, while also accommodating people in hard situations, especially with a mikvah, which allows husbands and wives to live together, a very important issue of its own. So the question of piping in water to a mikvah is our fundamental issue for the 13th of Adar Sheni of, and that is a responsible day for the 13th day of Adar Sheni. With thanks to you, Rabbi Jacob Brown, with David Hochhauser. Have a great day.